Hazarat Pir Murshid Inayat Khan. Let thy might strengthen me, thy light inspire me, and let thy love move my soul to joy. And then Allahu, 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 Allahu. So listen and join me. We'll sing a few rounds and then we'll... Towards the One, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. So for the benefit of the recording, I want people that may be listening to this later to understand that we are multiple layers of classes going on at this wonderful retreat camp. And so the singing that we hear from above we let it just wash over us and bathe us with song and light. Would anyone like a little review of what we went through yesterday? Yeah, and for the benefit of those that were not here as well. So the subject of this class time is called, it's from Message Volume 8 on the subject of the privilege of being human. And yesterday, which is really such a privilege, right? We forget it sometimes, but oh my God, this precious human life. And this section, this paper was on human beings likened to light. And I'm just going to touch on a few subjects and then finish it, because we had a very lively and interactive, wonderful conversation, and we didn't get to the end of the class. So I'll finish that up, and then we'll move on. So the essence of the yesterday, and I think I want to emphasize that again, were these, that we are likened to light in this way, that the soul is the glow, the mind is the flame, the body is the end of the flame, the heat that comes from the light is the atmosphere. The subject of the camp today, of the whole camp, is radiance. And in a paper of Murshid's, another quote is that what radiance is the spreading of the atmosphere. And the greater the radiance, the greater the atmospheric condition that we share with others is. So that's important. That heat, the heat that comes from the light is the atmosphere. So again, the warmth of heart, the warmth of one's character, personality, or the reserve. That's also, there's a place for that. The veiling and the unveiling. The veiling and the unveiling. And there's a time for each. Sometimes in these retreat processes, Pir Vilayat used to talk about it as alchemy. And he would talk about it as the six stages of alchemy, and it was also likened to the arc of ascent and descent, and the idea that you first have to take stock of what one is willing. You know, we gave the metaphor of going up on a mountain and coming back down again, and what are you willing to let go of in order to not have to be burdened by it on your ascent? It's kind of a question one could pose, and it was part of that process. And then we began the ascent, where we would take really deep stock of oneself. You know, what is it that we're working on? What's pertinent for us? What are we willing to release? What are we willing to embrace? And that was the second phase. The third phase is kind of a more immaculate state, where one's very empty and open. But each stage also has the shadow, the light and the shadow. So while one's very open, one could also fall into a dark night. So all of these have these counterbalances, and it's good to look at that. Like, where is that? Which side of the coin is it? The next phase, of course, would be coming into union with the beloved. The next phase is reformation of one's being in the image of their soul, your soul, and then the next phase is coming back into life. So it's this whole movement. But the cycle, Zuleika spoke about it this morning, we're in that cycle, and different people move through it at different phases. So some people may be feeling contemplative today. There can be that tendency to even be a little weepy, or, you know, and that's so beautiful too, because that's the emptying. And I find myself going through that and being sensitive, but to be aware is also very good. So back to Murshid's paper. The heat that comes from the light is the atmosphere. The smoke that arises from the light, in reality doesn't belong to the light. It belongs to the fuel, okay? And as ignorance is troublesome for us, so the smoke rising from the light can be troublesome, or can be a filter, or can be something that appears to disturb the light, but really the light is always pervading. So that was important. We worked with the practice of Manaur, and maybe we could do that again. And Murshid's pithy teaching on Manaur, these are Murshid's words, Murshid and I, Hans. O God, the bestower of illumination. So if we're in a place where maybe the smoke is disturbing the light, we want a greater illumination. We want to clear that smoke or those clouds or that mist so that we can see more clearly, divine illumination. I also remind people, because I think it's very, in a way it's humorous, but also it's reality. You know, I say to people, what do you think it means to be illumined? I mean, it means everything is revealed. Everything, like the bless all that we receive in thankfulness, all. I mean, when Joe and I say that at home, we always say it together and we always go, all that we, you know, even when the really challenging times are coming and we raise our eyebrows, all that we receive in thankfulness, remember to bless that all too, right? And we always say that together. And all of it, you know, those challenges that make us stronger, you know, let thy might strengthen me. Manaur, the divine illumination, the thing that lights up. And when we light up, we don't just see the pretty objects. Sometimes we see the other objects, that the pieces of coal that need to be chipped away so that the diamond can come through. Okay. Remember, diamonds are made, isn't that true, geologically speaking? Aren't diamonds coming from a more gross material? And what happens to so that it can be a diamond? Right? Yeah. Yeah. So see that light within and without, the veiling and the unveiling of this light, the secret of the beloved that resides within each one of us. And so we're calling forth that light, that divine illumination, so that our minds may be clear, our hearts purified of impression, and that we will have a bright light on our path to guide us inwardly and outwardly. Yamunaur. Yamunaur, 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 just whisper, Manaur, 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 and silently feel the atmosphere, the radiance, Imagine or see each one of your cells alive, each particle of your being awakened with divine illumination, this power of Munawwar. Breathe it in and breathe it out. O God, the bestower of divine illumination, we had some question and answers yesterday by Murshid and his students. And in the last question, the question was asked about truth, and Murshid said that whatever the object is, we fall into the truth of that. So if the object is love, we fall, even if it's a fall, we fall into love. If it's success, even in the falling, there's a success. You know, if we learn something. And so this idea of what's the truth of the moment, of what's occurring, what's passing. And we talked about the nature of impermanence a little bit, and that things are passing. Things are impermanent. It's in a flow. We think it's fixed. I liked Munira gave that dance and was talking about that quote about the bridge is there to cross over but not to build your house on. It's like that, right? That was a beautiful quote, and that's the way it is. Life is for us to pass through and awaken, or to move to the other shore, but it's not that we stay in one fixed point or that we've arrived. You know, we may rest for a moment, but then we have to move on. And then Murshid says, as a conclusion to that subject about falling into the arms of truth, he says to his students, to us, besides, the hopeful never fails. Both ones rise and fall means success. Failure is loss of hope. Failure is loss of hope. As long as there is hope, there is no failure. And you all know that story of the ones that survived the concentration camps. Were the ones that maintained hope, and the ones that became hopeless couldn't survive. There was nothing, no end in sight for them. And then a student asked this question, and what of those who do not hope any longer? And Murshid's answer is, then that is the end of success. One could just as well say that's the end of life. But Murshid said, then that is the end of success. And then a student asked, is there nothing that can help them? And Murshid's answer is, a miracle can do something. Nothing is impossible. Nothing is more painful than loss of hope. A hopeless person is a dead person. A person who is dead with hope is living. A person who is dead with hope is living. I think most of you know Murshid Kabir has been dealing with some health challenges. And we were talking about his experience of going to the cancer center for his treatments. And I said to him, you know, I went every time with my mother to the cancer center, and do you find it the same there as we found it? That the people who were dying were the most living? And he said, yes, it's like people are really alive, you know? There's something that... I hope that you either will or have had the privilege of being with someone in those last days or in their passing. That alone can give you great hope. When you see the transformation as the spirit leaves the body can relax out of pain and there's something that's going out. It's beautiful. It's really beautiful. And of course, the Sufis say die before death.
In that process of watching somebody die, there's the smoke of one's own sorrow, which colors that experience. That's what I experienced.
The person witnessing the passing person?
No, yeah, right. I mean, I had that experience of just the sorrow, just the grief, sadness, watching a dear one pass. It's overwhelming.
It can be that.
It's complex.
Sure, it's many layers, I'm sure. For people, I've had the privilege of seeing that a few times. It's funny, the family knows something's up with me. Whenever there's someone that's ill and is struggling against death, they don't even know why they're calling me. But they always say, can you come? And it's always so interesting to see when people are resisting that crossing over. And you know, I had an uncle that was just really resistant. Of course, he was that way. He was so feisty in life. And I went to him and I said, Uncle Frank, the cage is open. The bird can fly free now. And he totally relaxed and was able to. I said, just let the kite go. Let it go. Let it go. He was able to. You know, sometimes just whispering into someone's ear. And I can tell you from my own experience, I miss the physicality sometimes of the people that have gone beyond, but I feel them more present in some ways. They're not limited anymore, you know. And besides, I just talk out loud to them anyway. People probably think I'm crazy. I'm having conversations. Mom, what would you do with that? Or, you know, whatever, you know, or my teachers, you know, Murshid Kabir, what would you say to me right now? Or, you know, and I'm listening. You could do it. But I'm verbal, so I talk aloud.
Can I just share?
Of course, please do.
I was at my mom's death, and of course she's in New York, New England girl. And I'm there with my aunt, and she had struggled with her cancer. And months before that, we'd gone to New England to Boston. And I said, you know, she was sick, but she still walked the Freedom Trail.
Yeah.
And she took her last breath at that moment.
How beautiful is that? On that, infinitely on that freedom trail now. So this idea of hope, and have you ever felt? I sometimes have had those moments where I thought things seemed hopeless, you know. And we talked a little bit about surrender yesterday. It's like it forces me to surrender my will. And then something else happens. It's like, hey, you're not the center of the universe. Get over it. You know, it's kind of like it it's a good message to know that we're not the doer. We're being done. So Murshid gives us beautiful practice. And again, those in our immediate circle will be taking these up and we'll send you some information. And if you feel inspired by the practice or called to do it, respectfully ask your own teacher, guide. And the practice is Yagani. And it's spelled G-H-A-N-I. Gani. Murshid's pithy description is to make the situation favorable. Have I got your interest now? Can you hear me now? How wonderful is that, to make the situation favorable? Yagani. So now we're working with divine illumination so that we can gain clarity and insight. And Yagani, invoking the divine presence to transform a situation into a favorable circumstance or outcome. Now, also there's an element of surrender, because our idea of a favorable outcome and Allah's idea of a favorable outcome could be two things, right? Always remember, make mental note, and I'll make it here for the recording. Physiciansoftheheart.org. There you can go, and they have an index of all of the blessed names of God from the Quran. You can click on the name and it will take you to a description, but also you can listen to it. You can listen to a native speaker, Imam Bilal and Pir Zia, who studied Arabic. So you can hear sort of the different dialectical expressions. So if if you're very keyed into sound and you want to hear that vibration, it's there for you. Physiciansoftheheart.org, and you can also get there through the Rouhaniyat website. Yagani, 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 Yagani. And now we whisper, Gani. Silently. Throw the light of the beloved divine illumination upon some situation in your life And then put the vibration of Gani there. Ya Gani. So today's class, now that was our review, is about, same subject, the chapter on signs of spirituality. Signs of spirituality. The difference between our soul, our body, and our body, excuse me, let me start again. The difference between our soul and our body, which sometimes we consider as great as between earth and heaven, is not so great. Soul and body are one light. Soul and body are one light. And therefore, the external part of man is expressive of the inner being. The external part of woman is expressive of her inner being. And the inner being is also dependent upon many ways, on the external being. So sometimes our external circumstances affect our inner sense of things, just as the inner part of us can affect the external things. This has many, you know, I always think we could take one of these phrases and make a lifetime study of it, because it's a very subtle thing, and each one of you, I'm sure if we asked you, would have a different understanding of that phrase. But isn't it true? I love to give the example of being in love. When you first fall in love, isn't everything grand? I mean, even the grumpiest person, you just have a great compassion and sympathy. It's like, they just need to be loved. If they knew how I felt, they wouldn't feel that way, right? It's this beautiful feeling. Of course, that can be sentimental and oftentimes passing and then fall into disappointment. But if we could live with that, I'm just talking from experience. I love every one of them still. I have to say I'm friends, but still. All things are passing. But that feeling of, it's not sentimental. It's a very deep feeling of connectedness. And we've had moments of that. We have it at times in zikr, or in a moment where we lose ourselves in the sight of a child or a beautiful landscape or a sunrise. It's just this moment of just incredible beauty and joy. And it's such a gift. And this is the feeling of being in love. But it's a divine love. And we long for that. We're always looking for home. And And it's like that song says sometimes, looking for love in all the wrong places, right? And I keep hearing also, all we need is love. Dun da 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 dun. All we need is love. Dun da 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 dun. Love is all we need. Love is all there is. Love is all there is. But sometimes we don't feel like that. And then sometimes we beat ourselves up because we don't feel like that. It's all part of it. It's all part of the drama.
Part of the song, though. It's easy.
It's easy. That's it. Inshallah. But this inner and outer being, so getting back to the metaphor, when we have this feeling of love, it transforms the world around us. We see things differently. And also when we are sad or we're experiencing loss or we're in deep inner contemplation or some sort of deep transformation, it can also change the environment for us. So understanding how the outer, and something can happen in the outer too that immediately changes something. I mean, that gives me great hope. There have been so many times where I have been in the depth of despair and then something happens and it's like, it was just around the corner and I didn't know, I couldn't see it. But knowing that again and again, that as it's happened, it gives me hope. Oh, I'm just here for, it's passing, it's passing, it's passing. And I don't have to identify with it. So this inner and outer being, again, sometimes it's the veiling and it's the unveiling of the beloved. And then Murshid says that we use these terms, inner and outer parts of one's being. They're terms for our convenience. And he says, in reality, there is one being and there's one light. There's one being and there's one light. If a person lacks magnetism, if he lacks enthusiasm and courage, if he lacks power of accomplishment, it is all owing to the lack of that radiance that belongs to one's being. So there it gets back to those the smoke. You know, is the smoke covering that radiance? It can, and it's okay. And sometimes that's, if one doesn't look at it as a failing, one might look at it almost as a protection as well. You know, it's like a cloaking for a time while we're hibernating or taking some next tender steps, and then the smoke can clear. Murshid goes on to say, the health of the body and the balance of the mind and the purity of the soul all depend upon the radiance of man's being, of woman's being, of our being. Remember yesterday, and never forget that practice. And those in our esoteric circle every day do that practice, every day. I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine life and light. The radiance. We draw it in from the atmosphere, from the life. Everything has life and light. We breathe that in, we let it nourish us as we would water and care for a plant. And then we offer it back again. So it's this constant, you know, with the more, I hesitate to say it, but honestly, you may want to think about it and see if it can become your experience. The more you do this, the more you don't feel so separate. You become like you're part of this vast ocean of beingness. It's just like we're a little vase that's containing some water. But what happens if the vase breaks? The water still remains. So. And those of us that have been doing this for some time know we're having less illness. We're more aware of when we need rest and food and quiet. We're just, you know, it's an awakening. But we can also draw upon the sustenance around us and offer it back again. So Murshid says then, he starts to list them. There's more. First point, these are bullet points in the text. Health of the body is therefore spiritualism. Just in Berlin, one of our friends, Russian born, lived in India, just moved to South Africa, beautiful, exquisite, you know, blonde, beautiful woman. And she, again, this was a retreat center run by a church, and they had a beer garden. So I just thought that was ever so cool. So we were having a hearty beer one afternoon, and someone had ordered an extra round, and someone didn't want theirs. And they said, "Would you like this, Iqbal?" And she said, "Yes, and you know, my doctor said beer is very good for me." She said, "It's full of B vitamins." Yeah. I didn't know that. Did you all?
Yeah.
Yeah, hence a reason to drink beer if you can. Some people can't tolerate it. Or they have allergies to it, or, you know, whatever. There's other health reasons where it's not good for you. But some people, you know, it's like one acupuncturist in our area, Cabria, many of you remember Cabria, he told her, "Eat meat and drink red wine." You know, what a prescription, you know. So we can't say that being all just this or that is always good. You know, sometimes we have to adapt for our health too. You know, maybe we need something. And those hard, fast rules can maybe even be unhealthy. So health of the body, therefore, is spiritualism. Balance of the mind is spiritual. And so is purity of the soul. A good atmosphere is the sign of spirituality. A good atmosphere. The power of the word. Courage without fear. Then he lists after that, fearlessness. Then he says, self-confidence is also a sign of spirituality. Okay. The capability of accomplishing something. So setting a goal and accomplishing it. Oh, Murshid talks about this a lot. Mastery through accomplishment. Keeping your mind concentrated on a goal. And it's not only we are going towards the goal, but as we concentrate on it, we actually draw that closer to us. It's planting that little seed in the consciousness, in the heart, and letting it come to fruition. Now, the mystical aspect of those that report in our circle, the women, on the new moon, that's the time to plant your seed. And as the moon starts to come to fruition, this wish, this prayer, this goal can come into the light. For men, it's the opposite. Pay attention to the full moon, watch your intentions then, and you release and become more receptive to the realization of it. It's very interesting. You can start to tune to nature. We've heard some discussion about the nature meditations. It's very beautiful to do that. And according to your own biological or inner call of your being, masculine or feminine, and then in invoking the opposite to support you, you know. I love it in Tibetan Buddhism. You know, people think, oh, those are sexy images in Tibetan Buddhism with the consort. But you notice, who is the one with her back towards the viewer protecting? It's always the feminine. She's there. I mean, usually she's turned, so she's looking also. But then the masculine deity is the one that's actually, she's kind of veiling them. But it's this synergy. it's the support. You know, we also do that in the sitting practice. You know, the usually it's the feminine is actually supporting the masculine, which is the opposite of in so many other traditions. So you can use that. Those of you that know Kasap, alternate nostril breathing, same principle. Left nostrils, feminine. Right nostrils, masculine. Or active and passive. Receptive and radiant. Lunar and solar. These are the energies of the world. And knowing them very well, you can know. Is this a part where I need to be, do I need to be receptive at this moment? Do I need to be active at this moment? Can I rest and receive? Do I need to give? You know, how? So understanding that, even working with the breath, is very, very good. We were talking about that, even in sleeping. You know, you see the image of the reclined Buddha, and he's laying on this, on his right side. You know this image of the reclining Buddha? That's yogic for, and of course, our sister Zuleika has been talking a lot about this. But the reason for that is it opens up the left nostril, and it puts us in a more passive or receptive mode, so we become less active. Mm-hmm. Okay? So it's a good posture. When I am in Dharamsala, Pure Immersion. They're all Pure Immersion, and they're all Rinpoches, and they're all His Holiness, and they're all, you know. But His Holiness the Dalai Lama gives us that prescription. We're very much supposed to put our hand under this ear and lay on our right side, recline. And often they give you a piece of cushy grass to put under your, with the plume up towards the head. And then he gives us the, plants the seed. Wake up at 3:00 in the morning and observe what your dream is. It's very interesting, just the power of suggestion, how that can happen, that there's something in that. And by the way, those of you that have sleeplessness between 2 and 4 in the morning, it's not just sleeplessness. And for women, it's not just menopause. It's a very special time to get up and pray. It's a blessing. And just pray, even if you're laying in bed. Lying in bed? Laying in bed? We have any English people here? Diane, you'll help me?
Lying.
Okay. It's good to put that vibration out in the atmosphere. Okay, fearlessness. Self-confidence is also a sign of spirituality. So don't shrink, and don't let anyone tell you you need to shrink or shine any less. It's like Popeye said, I am's what I am's. I can't be's no more and no less, right? The capability of accomplishing something and the strength of struggle along all through life. And the strength of struggle along all through life. Sometimes we're dancing and sometimes we're... It's all a dance, really. It's all very interesting, too. Has anyone seen this happen? Like, you've seen something moving, like maybe at dusk or dawn, like, and you're catching it, and it's like, oh my God, that looks like an animal that's been deeply wounded, you know? Has anyone else ever done that, or on the side of the road seen something kind of moving and suffering, and it's like, and then you realize it was a trash bag? And it's like the mind, what it does, and it has this whole story, and then it's like, what am I going to do? Am I going to get it? Am I going to get to the bed? Am I going to, you know, it's like this whole thing that we do. This is how it is. It's really all an illusion, and it becomes a projection of the mind. I have a quote that I keep, this collection of quotes of Murshid's. And I have them very handy, my phone. In my notes, and I really want to share this one with you because I think it's so beautiful. This is from the Gayan. And it's called the section on an illuminated word. True happiness is in the love stream that springs from one soul. And the one who will allow this stream to flow continually in all conditions of life, in all situations, however difficult, will have a happiness that truly belongs to them. A love stream that flows through all circumstances of life, however difficult. And never forget, this was the inspiration this morning to remind you of that quote by Shanti Dave that Dalai Lama says a lot. He understands it very well under the circumstances that he and his people have gone through. Think of those that hurt you and harm you as the great guru who comes to teach you strength and courage. Think of you, those that hurt you and harm you as the great guru that comes to teach you strength and courage. When Rinpoche gave me the prostration practice, you know, that's part of the Nundro where you have to do recitation of the mantra, you know, 100,000 times the prostrations, full prostrations, 100,000 times with visualization. When he taught me how to build the merit field that I was concentrating on, he said, think of your mother and father on your left and right, all your relations around you, all the Buddhas of all times filling space, the most beautiful landscape you can imagine, lush and pure, pure waters flowing, trees that with, you know, wish-fulfilling gems on them, and the most beautiful fruits and vegetation. All the animals are with you. Everything is as beautiful and as vivid and filled with color and light as you can possibly imagine, spilled into infinite space, filling it. And he said, and before you are your enemies. And you prostrate. Can you imagine? It's your, everyone else is around you and you're the chant master, but you're prostrating to your enemies. That's a pretty heavy duty thing. And I said, Rinpoche, I feel as if you and your holiness and, you know, all my teachers should be there. He said, no. It's not the kindness of the gurus that help you really understand the teachings. It's your enemies that really give you the opportunity to practice. So take that, all you meanies. And a big thank you at that. Don't ever forget it. And don't feel sorry for yourself. When you start feeling like that, that's what's called self-cherishing. We start thinking more of ourselves than others. And if there's only one of us and there's billions of other beings, what's more important? It's okay. Every once in a while, everybody has to have a pity party. But, you know, then you've moved through it, right?
It seems like that's an affirmation that there really is no harm, because, like, the part of us that feels like we can be harmed is, like, because everything that happens is part of our awakening, then that's part of the releasing of that kind of feeling victimized, because you recognize that no harm actually has been done.
Even if, you know what, even if they take your life, a person's life, what harm can be done? We go on. The light goes on. Something created can never be destroyed. It just changes maybe space and time and form. That's all. It's still there. In another set of Murshid's teachings, he talks about that. Why do you think that the dead have gone somewhere else? Their energy is still all around you. They're still here. Oh, and he also talks about that whole idea of heaven. Whoever you haven't worked it out here with you is going to be following you around so you can work it out there. I mean, imagine that. It's like they're still going to be there, like, you know. It's good to just turn around and say, what is it that we need to work on? Thank you. Okay. Thank you for sharing that. I think that that's part of this. It's taking a difficult situation and turning it to see the benefit that we can gain from it. Is it compassion for our offenders? Who greater an example than Jesus hanging on the cross saying, "Forgive them, Father, they know not what they do." I mean, really? I mean, we can endure a few little sacrifices, a few little splinters in life. And some of us have really big splinters. And that can be also beautiful and build a strength of character. Sounds like little footprints. Hello, it is. I was right. Are we over? Is our time surely can't be over. Are you just deciding to join us?
I just finished cutting strawberries.
You're welcome to join us. And Gabriel, you've been sitting outside. And sometimes people are comfortable out there, but certainly feel free to come and join us.
Please forgive me, but I was looking for Akbar, and Akbar's class is in here, right? It's upstairs.
Well, it was upstairs, and if they're not out there, then they've gone outside. You have to use your intuition to know which way they've gone.
I'll just stay here.
Okay. Yeah, welcome. Yeah.
You said you are where you're supposed to be.
Inshallah. So, I'm going to just go through this list, just uninterrupted. Mirshad talks about the health of the body, the balance of the mind, the purity of the soul, all depend upon the radiance of our being. And he gives us these indications. Health of the body is therefore is spiritualism. Balance of the mind is spiritual, and also purity of the soul. A good atmosphere is a sign of spirituality. The power of the word, the courage without fear, fearlessness. Self-confidence is also a sign of spirituality. The capability of accomplishing something and strength of struggling all through life. He says all these are signs of spirituality. And then there are a few question and answers. We were kind of talking about that yesterday, to listen, you know, kind of listen to the mind of the students that were around Mirshad. And he had exceeding patience, you know, exceeding patience. Unceasing, you might say. So the question, and we're getting to a practice, so I'm going on through this. And we can have some discussion if you're taking little notes or mental notes. How can one live so that it is approved by others?
Forget about it.
Exactly. Now keep in mind what we're talking about. This group of people, Europe, sort of Protestant, Christian upbringing, also maybe upper echelon of the society. So there's this whole idea of, you know, everybody's watching you and has something to say about. We know that's true. Mm-hmm. I would like to, after this recording's off, I'll tell you a piece of advice my mom gave me about that. It was a good one, too. Okay. So Mirshad's answer, it is impossible to live the life that one considers best and others consider best. Best one can do is one's best. Like, what's best for you? But it's also good to remember that about other people, that they may be, you know, not what we think's best for them, but maybe what's best for them. I like saying it this way, though. This is my saying. Some of you know this saying. Defy all conventionality. You will never be free unless you know how to do that and not be concerned about the repercussions. Now, I sound like a sociopath, I'm pretty sure. But and maybe I am, I don't think so. But, you know, I also think about, I also try very hard, and I do slip and I do fall, but I try to be a little, you know, it's like those broadcasts where they're just a few minutes before if they have to bleep something out. I try to do that. I try to be a little bit ahead of myself, so I'm monitoring what's arising before it comes out of my mouth. And it doesn't always happen. Sometimes it comes out. And then I have to be, I can always apologize, but I also have to wonder if it wasn't important to also come out. Maybe there was something in the energy that needed to be interjected into the atmosphere. So I try to also be not, you know, beating myself up all the time about it. It's like, perhaps is there some divine impetus in that? Try to see God's hidden hand in everything. Yes.
Question about personality types like Magram or other personality type studies. When you're in that student role of trying to look about you and see, oh, she's that way because that. How would you spiritually have an activism that would represent? I don't even know whether to call it tolerance, but acceptance and a stretch of who you can continue to be in your circle of loving friends or loving, accepting. Is there a secret to that? Like you were saying, you watch your words before they come out of your mouth. You watch your thoughts, I assume, before your words. And giving that all consideration, how you become the best possible, like if you were a doctor or a professional in the service, you can't do that to everybody that comes into you for help. You can't be judging anybody. But what is that judgment thing? Did you already cover that? Judgment
no.
is my hardest.
Yeah, it's everyone's hardest piece. But I, you know, when I watch my judging mind, I've tried to use the word for myself, especially if any of you have come from an immediate sort of ethnic background where maybe your people had to endure some sort of discrimination. I don't know if anyone's dealt with that. Mine were Italian, and so we learned to just be the biggest, toughest guys on the block, you know, to control that. But we endured some things, and there are things in family consciousness about that. And part of the protection is the judging. You know, they're over there, and they're different, and we're this way. And so we learn that. But I find that that's very painful for me when I'm judging other people. And I realize that if I'm judging them, I'm really probably I say to myself, well, if you're judging them, what are the ways in which you're also judging yourself and hurting yourself, you know? And the other fact is I do believe that we are mirrors for each other. So whatever is arising is somehow something that we're seeing externally that's something in ourselves. Perhaps it's even hidden and we're not aware of it, but it becomes very clear when it becomes externalized. Again, it's that inner and outer world that Marcia was just talking about, you know? And I think if somehow you can, for me, the words that I've tried to use instead of judgment is discriminating awareness. Because some of that is also good for us. It can protect us. It can let us know when not to go towards certain situations that may not be helpful or healthy to us. That doesn't mean we can't. I do feel it's possible to love everyone. But there is something in us that maybe doesn't like certain things about people, and that's okay. And Marcia describes it as notes on a piano, actually, is his metaphor. But he says, it's not the fault of one note with another note that they're not harmonizing. They're just individual notes. They don't seem harmonious. But he said, but the person that can tune to the keynote is the one that can help tune all beings. And so that's really, in some way, the objective, isn't it? Is to like tune, not worry about what other people are doing. Let that come back on us, and be the concern can be awareness of what our thoughts, words, and actions are, and try to purify this being again with that beautiful practice. I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine life and light, and just keep doing that through the scales of the elemental breaths. But with that phrase, it can help purify, it can help eliminate judgments. And then we're working on ourselves, and then we have that radiance to have the atmosphere, or like those that play the tambura, you know, the one stroke, one string creates a sympathetic vibration of all the other strings. You know, are we that note that can then help other beings resonate, you know? And being sensitive, you know, I have a tendency, not only in these circumstances, but a lot of times you'll notice I'm not around because I have to go. I'm very introverted. My nature is that. I appear to be quite extroverted, and I can be very solar when I have to. I've learned to do that for certain purposes, and I let myself be used for that. But my inner sense is a quietude and kind of hermit-like. So I try to also respect that when I meet someone that maybe is a little, because I could, you know, when I'm really radiating, I mean, it's like, it could blast someone out. So I try to be sensitive to the atmosphere of others too, so that I'm not, or I don't, you know, approach them too harshly so they feel like they have to adapt to me. I'm trying to be adaptable to others. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. It's just from my own experience, and I know each one of you have your own that are profound, I'm quite sure. One more question and answer, and then I'm trying to build up to this practice, which is really kind of the last practice, but we'll keep working on these for the next few days. So question, in order to be quite sure, to be able to give to another, should one not have a great deal of vitality oneself? In order to be quite sure, to be able to give to another, should one not have a great deal of vitality oneself? So this is the idea that, you know, we have to do our own work and give from... Well, let's see what Mershit has to say. And then then Nuria can speak. Mershit's answer is, vitality also comes from self-confidence. Vitality also comes from self-confidence. Very often one will see a person with no extraordinary strength and vitality having more strength than Sandow. So that's a proper name, Eugene Sandow. He was the father of modern bodybuilding. Okay? So he's saying some people have no particular strength, either in perhaps one could maybe even say of character or of person, but this vitality is a strength in and of itself. It's a life force. So again, the answer, in order to be quite sure that one is able to give to another, should one not, it's kind of funny wording, have a great deal of vitality oneself? And Mershit's answer is, vitality also comes from self-confidence. So we could also say from experience, you know? And remember, Mershit said confidence and fearlessness. Like, you know, if we're always doing like, you know, like the kitty cat, like, Is that going to move? You know, then we're never really taking that step. Okay, yeah, maybe that mousetrap's going to slap on there, but then it's like, well, then what are you going to do? You know? You're going to be fearless about it, right? And then it's like, now I know that. Now I have confidence because I know what that thing, you know, and so it goes. So, Vitality also comes from a self-confidence. Very often one will see a person with no extraordinary strength and vitality, their vitality, having more strength than a Sandow. And again, Eugene Sandow, German pioneering, I made a footnote for myself, was a German pioneering bodybuilder known as the father of modern bodybuilding. We've probably seen pictures of him. Right? I mean, yeah. Well, and we know that even some of those bodybuilders aren't very strong.
Right.
You know, and why is that? Often they're not really very agile. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. Keep it moving, because that's... So here's the practice that Murshid gives. Oh my God! And I think most of you know that when we're heading towards one of these classes, I always start the practices ahead of time. So I'm like working with them before we come to them, and I've got the goosebumps because these group of practices are just so dynamic and they're so luminous, and they really do help give someone this hope and confidence and a kind of vitality. So Murshid's explanation of Ya Azim. A-Z-I-M, or one could say A-Z-E-E-M, Ya Azim is to gain force, strength, enthusiasm for the accomplishment of the work. And that work is this, it's that, it's work, it's play, it's love, it's all of it, okay? To gain force, strength, enthusiasm for the accomplishment. For accomplishment. Whatever that may be. And these are really, some of you know that a great responsibility has been put upon my shoulders. And I'll tell you that kind of weight of responsibility could break a person. But keeping faith in the practices, the spirit of guidance, the confidence that other people are behind, you know, giving confidence is something. It really can lift you up. And these practices have been very helpful in this time. Ya Azim. Enthusiasm, light, vitality. I love that word, vitality. Vital, being vital. Shall we do it together? Bless you. Zing, the motor. Zing, you hear it? Ya Zing, Ya Zing, Ya Zing. Do you hear it? Ya Zing, Ya Zing. Open your eyes for a minute. Ya Zing. You see it? Woo! Ya Zing, Ya Zing, Ya Zing, Ya Zing. Ya Zim, Ya Zim. Let us know when you get to 34. Ya Zim, 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 Ya Zim. Ya Zim, Ya Zim, Ya Zim, Ya Zim, Ya Zim, Ya Zim, Ya Zim. And you'll have to be our chant master because my beads are a little tied up right now. Whisper. And you can guide us, you know, let us know when we're getting to that next 34, and then we'll just whisper, okay? Thank you so much. Asi, 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 Asi. Sounds like they're back. I think it might be time, though, huh?
It's after three.
Yeah. Okay. So remember this practice. If you need it throughout the time here, you know, let it. I think sometimes this can also be a respite from our normal practices, and we can take up these things, just try them on a little bit while we're here, and may it be of benefit. May it be of benefit.